breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And good morning, everybody. Back from 2 days well-deserved time off, I should say.
Just ask him.
Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist, Bill McCosh, Republican strategist. We're in different seats today because somebody blew up the mic, so we had to move a mic. Now, Joe is to my, used to be straight on, now he's to my left in radio world. And then Bill McCosh in his regular seat. So we'll figure it out. Gentlemen, how are you on this Friday?
Two of you may be moving a little slower because you were at Summerfest last night.
Yeah. Definitely.
I can't wait to hear about that.
What did Marshawn Lynch say? I'm just here so I don't get fined.
That one was
for Brandon.
You saw the Eric Church concert last night. How was it?
Fantastic. He never misses. Wish he could have played longer. You know, he wanted to play all night. I mean, I've seen him play shows for 3 hours. But at the, what is it now? The American Family
Amphitheater?
At the amphitheater. They make you shut it off at 11:30.
Yeah, which is probably a good rule.
Right? Probably a good rule.
Yeah, because yeah. Otherwise you would be in much worse shape. I was smart. I was home by dinner time.
If I had known it was going to go past 11:30, I might have called in a friend and gotten a sub.
Phone a friend.
Then that would be
Sarah Godlewski. She's a state employee now. You can't do that one anymore.
All she does is talk about elections now. All right, gentlemen, Bill and Joe. Let's start with you, Bill. Lots of work in Madison. We're getting closer to a budget.
We have a budget through the Joint Finance Committee. It still needs to pass both houses of the legislature, but the GOP budget, there's a lot to be excited about. It taxes less, it spends less, and it borrows less than Governor Evers. All things I think I predicted here back in February. They've accomplished those goals, historic increases in school funding, major literacy package that will be finalized this next week, a historic tax cut, massive investment in housing, massive investment in local government, huge historic investment in transportation, and criminal justice. More cops on the streets, more pay for prison guards. So I'd say overall, this is an A budget for the Republicans. Well done.
All right, Joe, from the Democratic side of the aisle, what does that look like to you?
I don't like this new seat. I just want to say that.
Now you got to look at me, brother.
And some missed opportunities, in my view. Zeroing out the school safety tip line that the Department of Justice had been running, more than 6,000 anonymous tips. No new money for broadband expansion. Still have not expanded Medicaid, which would have brought us an additional $1.6 billion from the feds. And a cut at a time of a $7 billion surplus to the University of Wisconsin system, one of the absolute gems of our state. So are there good things in this budget? Absolutely. Is this the perfect budget cycle? No. There were some real missed opportunities that Republicans
refused to
do.
I think you and I are going to agree that for the first time in three budgets under Governor Evers and Republican majorities, they did find consensus on a couple key issues. Grand bargains, we like to refer to them as.
Is
shared
the
revenue for
grand
sure.
Bargain?
Grand.
Oh, okay.
Grand.
I thought it was like attorneys general.
Yeah. shared revenue, schools, transportation, those are all areas that everybody wanted to see addressed, and they were. And two of those are already signed into law. The transportation piece is still in the budget. So there was a level of trust that was established between the Republican majorities and the Evers administration on some key items. But not a circle of trust. And that's important because once this bill passes the legislature, the governor will have his way with his partial veto.
So, gentlemen, what will survive? What will it look like when the governor does his thing?
I think there will be significant partial vetoes.
Understand.
Based on what they did last night and maybe over the last week, there weren't agreements on the tax package, for example. Although they did take the governor's advice. He said, if you pass a flat tax, I'll veto the whole budget. They did not pass a flat tax. They flattened the progressive income tax that we already have. They made it more competitive with other states. We're still going to have the highest top rate other than the state of Minnesota in the Midwest. But they did a nice job of lowering that rate to try and keep money here in the state of Wisconsin. I don't know that the governor is going to go along with the reduction in the top rate, but I think what they did by combining the middle two rates and lowering the bottom rate, I could see that he could sign those into law.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way it is now, if you make $50,000 or if you make $400,000, you get taxed at the same rate. That's not very progressive. I would have liked to see, I think Democrats would have liked to see more relief targeted to that lowest bracket under 36,000, only like 0.4%, as opposed to the 15 to 17% cuts at the highest end, those earners making more than $400,000. It's just a different philosophy.
How
right?
much tax are you paying on $36,000?
Not much.
I mean, you can only cut so much
and
on a small
number. And you may be receiving
number.
Other benefits at that level,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so I understand the argument because it plays well in politics, but you're not paying that much. The small percentage probably makes fiscal sense.
And letting those folks have more money in their pocket means more money is spent and is moving through the economy. That's better for the state than, you know, that $100 to that family or that individual means more than $1,000 does to somebody making $500,000 a year. That's the point.
On the issue of UW cuts, so the governor will look at that and say that's not happening. So where does that go then from there?
So the question will be how the bill is drafted, and that will determine what the governor's options are on the partial veto. And I happen to be listening to Speaker Voss on a different radio station on the way in. He doesn't think that the governor can eliminate the cut. Having worked for a governor for 10 years, I'm not so sure about that. I think the governor's got sort of extraordinary power when it comes to the partial veto, but he could potentially eliminate that cut and then also insert the $32 million they parked as an increase for UW. I think that probably is the best case scenario that UW can hope for, is the $32 million cut goes away and they get the $32 million that's parked at the Joint Finance Supplemental. That's probably the best case. Maybe the truth lies somewhere in between there. But I think the deeper point here, Steve and Joe, is UW needs a new relationship with the Capitol. They have had this wrong now this entire budget cycle. They're talking past one another on this issue of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't understand how they could be missing each other by so much, but my guess is a lot of those chancellors are missing the days when Tommy Thompson was the president of the University of Wisconsin system, because he actually got them new money, $8 million in new money, plus he did away with the tuition freeze. So the system did far better under Tommy Thompson than they did in this particular budget, and that gets to relationship and understanding what they're telling you.
On this DEI piece, is there common ground on this? Because it seems like both sides are vastly
there's far
not, apart.
But let's not pretend that this is all about DEI, right? I mean, how do you build a relationship with Republicans who, for the first time in, I don't know, 1,000 years, are willing to say no to WMC when they're like, we need this new engineering building. We need more graduates with engineering degrees. And Republicans on Joint Finance are like, no, absolutely not. How do you build that relationship? They can claim it's all about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but let's be real. It's deeper than that. There is an opposition to the University of Wisconsin system that now they're trying to paper over by saying it's about DEI. It's way more than that.
Is it punishment? Because to that engineering piece, it sort of sounds like it.
Well, I think there are some there is some punishment probably being meted out, you know, for some things that have happened over the either on campus in Madison in particular, or the perceived things that have happened on campus, you know, including bringing in Eric Holder to be the commencement address speaker. Listen, my kid graduated. I was at that ceremony. It wasn't political, but Eric Holder is a political figure in a very deep way. And so I don't think that was great judgment on the part of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm a Badger. Listen, I want the University of Wisconsin system to do well. I believe, as former Commerce Secretary, that it is an integral part of the future of the state of Wisconsin, and it has been since its inception. And I believe in the Wisconsin idea, but I think they have to find a different way to communicate with GOP lawmakers on what value they're adding. By the way, I think the engineering building is not dead. And the speaker essentially said that yesterday, and so did the members of the Joint Finance Committee, Mark Bourne in particular. I think that's a possibility that will come back in the fall.
Outside of the state budget?
Yeah, I do.
Who is the bridge builder on the side of Republicans when it comes to UW? Well, give me a name or names.
Well, I think it starts with who is it on the University of Wisconsin system side,
right? Looking at it from that perspective.
Who do they have that can communicate with Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Lemieux? I don't think they have somebody like that at this point in time. So which means the regents need to identify somebody that could either fill that role, or they need to sort of reposition Jay Rothman so that he can do a better job at that. I would say, having watched this almost on a daily basis in the Capitol, I don't think the strategy was very good by University of Wisconsin system. I think Jay Rothman was overused. I know him. I like him. I respect him. But you don't have the CEO in the Capitol daily. I saw Jay Rothman in the Capitol more than any other lobbyist over the last 2 months. That was overuse on his part and on his staff's part. His staff should have been doing most of that work.
Well, I mean, if they could thaw the Evers-Voss-Lemahieu relationship, perhaps there's some opportunity on the UW side of things.
Listen, if you go through the roster of the 132 lawmakers, probably a majority of them graduated from one of the UW schools. So there is a base to work with in the Capitol. It isn't an R versus D thing necessarily. It's a, what are you doing to advance the Wisconsin idea, and how can we all work together on that?
He is Bill McCosh and Joe Zepecki in studio on this Friday, as always, 9 o'clock hour, Political Power Hour here on WTMJ. If you have a question, I already got a few popping up on the old National Bank. Talk and text line 855-616-1620. All right, so you got the Brewers funding. Where's that going to go? And then this question about a lawsuit coming out of Milwaukee back against the legislature and the new law. We'll discuss that after this short break here on WTMJ. Who's that artist?
Zach Brown Band.
Zach Brown
Band. Playing Summerfest tonight.
Oh, tonight.
Are you going back?
No. No, I'm
you need a
I'm
night
good.
Off, old man.
This is when young Joe realizes he's not as young as he thinks
right.
he is. All right, let's talk about Brewers funding. We thought it might be part of some package, but now here we are talking that it'll be separate. What, is this a warning sign?
I think if I were the city, I would view it as a warning sign, right? So as soon as the shared revenue package was signed in Wausau, for of all places,
why are you
down on Wausau?
I like Wausau. I'm from northern Wisconsin. By the way, we call Wausau southern Wisconsin. I'm from Superior. That's southern
Shout
Wisconsin.
Shout out to Mayor Katie Rosenberg, who's been on the show.
Okay, so shortly after that, the city council president, Perez, said, I don't like this deal. We're going to hire an outside attorney and sue on some of the provisions that directly impact Milwaukee, including related to the hub, the streetcar. And, that puts the mayor in a very difficult spot, because remember, the mayor, the county executive, and the governor all agreed to each of these provisions. They may not like them, but that's how grand bargains work. You give some, you get some. So the mayor's in a tough spot. He's got to get a 2/3 majority to get his sales tax passed. And I understand if I'm him, I say nothing about this and say I did what I had to do to get us this opportunity and then start working my members. But I think the city council sort of is over their skis on this one and sent a very negative signal to GOP majorities in the Capitol. And I think, to a certain degree, the Brewers paid the price for it. And the other problem the Brewers have is there's not a lot of urgency to that deal. There's still several years left on their current lease, so it's not like this has to get done today. So I'm pretty certain that this is going to slip till the fall.
And Joe's wearing a Brewers cap today.
And shirt. The full Brewers regalia.
Wow.
The full experience.
Wow.
Go Brewers.
Very nice.
I've made my position clear on this. I think these taxpayer-funded, hundreds of millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars to professional sports teams that are valued in the billions is absolute insanity.
Why do you hate the
I love the Milwaukee Brewers. It is obscene that the same stadium that I have to pay $11 for a beer at is going to get tens of millions of dollars in taxpayer funding. These businesses are profitable, they make great money. I just
it's how the game is played now.
I understand. That doesn't
Playing
mean
the
that's
role
the way
of Bill
it should
McCashin
be.
Today is Joe Zepecki.
And and what we see at every level of government, Bill is exactly right, is that there's without a deadline, right? Without it,
there's no urgency.
Lawmakers like to procrastinate, right? Whether it's the debt ceiling or the budget.
Right.
Me, I never procrastinate.
It creates the creative juices to get stuff done.
I never knocked out an 11-page paper.
Brewers aside, though, so you get the money or the opportunity to get the money through this tax increase that you still have to vote for, and then you're going to sue them. That's going to tick some. I was going to say something. That's going to tick some people off.
Yeah, and put yourself in the shoes of the common council members here who have Republican lawmakers saying, you don't know what you're doing. You can't run your own city. We're going to tell you how to do it. We're going to tell you what money
news,
to spend.
Sometimes that's right.
Okay. And I don't think we should be surprised that people who were not in the room for the deal have some complaints about the deal.
They're not in the room where it happened.
Right. They're going to pound the table. They're going to hoot and holler. And at the end of the day, they're going to have to do the right thing. And I think they will.
But the guys who were elected by bigger constituencies, Tony Evers and Chevy Johnson, were in the room, right?
And those common council members and every local elected, they're so humble when it comes to that kind of comparison.
Right?
As
yeah.
you know,
I'm sure they
having
defer.
Worked with elected
we'll
officials,
we'll just defer
they go,
to you.
Oh, you got more votes than I did.
Yeah,
you know
got this.
Best. Nothing, I'll just go along.
Nothing
with,
was stopping them from going to these four hearings that were all scattered around middle of nowhere in Wisconsin.
I think probably some of them did.
Did they?
Yeah.
This is a problem of Milwaukee's making. Not of this council, not of Chevy Johnson, not of...
Right, generationally.
Generational.
You're right.
Right? And the Republicans in the legislature gave Milwaukee and the county an opportunity to address these issues for the long haul. And it sort of looks like you're looking a gift horse in the mouth by picking apart the deal after the fact.
What was it your old boss used to say? Stick it to Milwaukee?
One time.
Right.
I was with him. It was in Neillsville.
Right. And you know, imagine
and this is
imagine
pre-internet,
40
really?
Years later,
you know, before Twitter,
people still feel a certain way about yeah. Republican
knowing
lawmakers.
Neillsville very well, he's playing to the crowd.
Well, he was. At 7:30 in the morning, the crowd went crazy. But by the time him and his Harley group got to Milwaukee that night, he presented John Norquist with a cake.
And a kiss on the cheek.
No, you can actually dig up the history on this, and it's a funny conclusion.
I don't have to dig
it
up. You're right here.
Yeah, but it that was an interesting
resident
day.
Historian.
Yeah, where we're using landlines to call and say, "Uh-oh, we had a Thompson moment. We got to clean this up."
He's playing the room, man.
He was playing the room.
I've been in Neillsville,
and they loved it.
They're not Milwaukee friendly there. Trust me,
they're not.
No, it's
they're
a great
not.
Place though.
Yeah, it is.
I do some deer hunting around there.
Do you?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
Great cheese in that area too.
Cheese, yes.
Yes.
And?
Nasonville Dairy is one of my favorite.
If you find the right Amish family, some great bakery as well.
Yeah.
Man, they're cranking out apple pies that are amazing. I don't know how they're doing it, but they're no power.
Do you tell them how to make the apple pies?
Why would you say that?
Well, I mean, maybe that's what Republican lawmakers should stop telling the Common Council of Milwaukee how to make apple pies.
That's a reach for
so,
that.
I think people are right to be, they're going to feel a way about that.
I think David Crowley and Chevy Johnson have done an unbelievable job of reestablishing a relationship between the city of Milwaukee, the county of Milwaukee, and the GOP majorities in the legislature. They're in a sort of a difficult time where they both need to get 2/3 of their council and county board to agree to these increases. But ultimately, those were done for the benefit of the people of Milwaukee. And I give Chevy and David Crowley credit for the work they've done. And if I'm them, I keep my head low and just get my votes and get it done.
Quick one for Joe. Mistake for the mayor to trot up to Wausau when he had a shooting after the Juneteenth celebration?
I mean, he had
very next day.
There, if he... Listen, there are shootings, sadly, what, every day, every other day?
Every day that ends in
Milwaukee.
Hawaii.
Yeah, I mean... He invested a lot of time and effort into trying to help the city of Milwaukee avoid bankruptcy. That bill is the best path to do that.
Agreed.
And elected leaders need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. I don't know if there was a way to do both. But anybody trying to score points for that
I
think the bill should have been signed here, actually.
Yeah, what was the Wausau piece? I don't get it.
I think the optics were that everybody benefits from this, that it isn't Milwaukee only, but I think most people understand that Milwaukee benefited the most. Although every community got a minimum of a 20% increase in their...
The local leaders are happy about it.
Yeah, plus they got a ton of money in road aids, too. So local communities did super well, so did counties in this biennial budget, and that's one of the things that they can all be proud of.
Republicans who say Democrats are all about Madison and Milwaukee are now complaining that the governor is going to Wausau to sign historic legislation.
Look at Joe fact-checking us. Come
nice.
On. Joseph Pecky, sharp after a long night at Summerfest.
Eric Church. We're going to have him crooning in one of these segments.
Yes, Joseph Pecky singing next half hour here on WTMJ. All right, producer Brandon has found his voice during the break. Good to hear that.
Let's go, Brandon.
Yeah, maybe those 6 shots of espresso, whatever he's pounding down in the morning, have finally caught up to him. All right, we're joined in studio Political Power Hour by Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist, Bill McCaution on the Republican side. Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
So, you know, he's running a campaign.
Really?
And
what's he running for?
Yeah, president of the United States. And he's facing multiple indictments. We've already seen some action there. Future ones, future news, breaking news to follow. He went on Fox with Bret Baier, a 2-part.
Yeah.
How do you view the ex-president?
How did he do?
Well, listen, I don't think it helped him.
No, I don't think so.
In any manner.
No.
For those who missed it, he admitted to the crime, is essentially what he did.
He basically said, I had documents, but I also had golf shirts in there and, you know, personal letters and things like that. And I just didn't have time to go through those documents. I think Chris Christie did the best job as a former prosecutor sort of pointing out how Trump may have hurt himself from a legal standpoint in that interview. But I think from a political standpoint, if you were watching that, you're saying, holy cow, this guy doesn't get it. I mean, he's still saying that he won, and he says by a lot in 2020. Well, listen, if you're a Trumper out there, I've promised I'm not going to go after you personally. I understand why you might support him, but there's a couple facts you got to remember. In the state of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which is a hardcore conservative legal and policy think tank, and the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau both did deep dives into the 2020 election in the state of Wisconsin and found no widespread fraud. There were some irregularities from town to town, that kind of thing, probably due to COVID. Sure. But it, none of what they found, either organization, a nonpartisan group and a right-wing group, would have turned the election towards Donald Trump in the state of Wisconsin. He still claims he won here. He did not win here. That's a reality. And I think the longer he says that, the more he says it, the louder he says it, the less likely it is he could ever win a general election.
Completely agree with everything you just said. That's right on. Yeah. Yet here we are. He's the leading candidate for Republicans.
Yeah.
And he just got like more than half of the Republican members of Congress from the swing state of Pennsylvania are apparently going to endorse him today. So the elected leaders within the Republican Party refuse to see the reality that this man is a problem for the Republican Party. He is probably going to doom them to another defeat. I don't get it.
Could be worse. Not only a defeat for the White House, but we could lose the House.
Yeah.
Because some states are redrawing their lines, probably to the benefit of Democrats, based on a case that went through the Supreme Court last week.
Why can't they quit him?
I've quit him. I voted for him twice. My wife's a donor to him. Right. I've quit him.
As someone who has, why can't the rest of them quit him?
That's a great question. I don't get it, Bill.
I think it has a lot more to do with the charisma and the bravado, right? The perception of a fighter. This guy's looking out for me. He has convinced a large segment of the Republican base that he's the only guy that will do those things. And in reality, I don't think the facts back that up or his record. He said he was going to drain the swamp. Let's put that at the top of the list. Number two probably would have been build a wall and have Mexico pay for it. Neither of those things happened, by the way. But on the drain the swamp thing, this Hunter Biden thing, which I think we're going to get to next, most of the cover-up in the FBI and the Department of Justice started under Trump's Justice Department, going back to 2017. So not only did he not drain the swamp
he made it swampier,
him.
Yeah.
He made it swampier. So I can't get there with him. I think we have better options. I think the reason that some lawmakers in states like Pennsylvania are embracing him is they want to get to the end of the process so fast. Listen, Ron DeSantis' campaign has not been great over the first 2 months. I think we've said that many times on here. I want him to be better. I hope he can be better. If not, I hope someone else emerges. But let's not rush this process by, jumping in bed with a guy who can't win the general election, in my opinion.
There's always someone else from Florida willing to run for the Republican nomination for president. Last week, it was the mayor of Miami.
Yeah.
This week, maybe it's Rick Scott.
Remember when they said we weren't going to have more than, maybe 5, 6, 7. Now we're going to have like 15 again.
Yeah, and I think that has to do with sort of how slow DeSantis has gotten out of the gates. People are saying, okay, he was leading last December. Now he's, 20 or 25, maybe even 35 points behind Trump. Maybe that means there's an opportunity for someone else. I don't think there is an opportunity for someone new. I think someone within this circle is going to have to emerge, or DeSantis is going to have to get better.
It sounds like the noose may be tightening. And that's, I shouldn't use that term. It sounds like the pressure with other indictments may happen this summer for the former president.
Yeah, possibly. But all of that gets diminished by the sideshow that is the Hunter Biden investigation, right? So there, I think what's happening to Biden, Joe Biden in particular, is far more damaging than what's happening to Trump. Trump's base doesn't care.
You think that's baked in, is what you're saying?
Yeah, but the independents who are watching this Biden thing, remember, one of the reasons Hillary Clinton lost in 2016 was this underlying notion that there was corruption surrounding the Clinton Foundation, all of the Clinton dealings. Joe Biden's getting that same stink right now, and he's not going to be able to get it off him. And, we might as well bridge into Hunter Biden here, but I think the federal attorney or federal judge, Mary Ellen Noriega, who now has this case, this plea deal, after doing a little research this morning, it doesn't appear that she can reject the plea deal but she can impose a prison sentence, and that's what she should do. She should show the American people there isn't a two-tier justice system and impose some prison time on Hunter Biden. If she wants people to think this was fair and above board, which it wasn't, and there's lots of records to prove that.
How can you say that? But like, you didn't go to law school. The guy who struck this deal with Hunter Biden is a Trump appointee who this investigation started in the last administration. And Merrick Garland, the current attorney general, said, you are making this call. No one is going to tell you what you can or cannot do. When the Trump prosecutor strikes the deal, how can you say it's a cover-up?
I think before Christmas, Merrick Garland will be before the House for impeachment charges.
Okay, that's a political act and exercise, as you know.
Yes.
You cannot say definitively, you don't know what the actions are. You're not an attorney. You don't see the evidence that these prosecutors have.
Did you read what the whistleblower put out yesterday?
Was this another one of the whistleblowers they can't find?
No.
This one they know. But
right?
here's my question, though.
The Trump prosecutor got to the bottom of it. This is what he decided.
Whatever this judge imposes, he's pled guilty. Is there more on top of this? Is there another chapter to this story?
What the judge has to make sure is that the investigation is not over, that this doesn't exonerate everything, right? So that these two cases, all of a sudden, nothing about Hunter Biden can be investigated, including any potential linkages his father may have to his business.
Who is suggesting that? That's not how the law
doesn't work that way. If there's other things, they would be investigated.
We'll see.
In more than 5 years, this is what they found.
DOJ.
They found he didn't pay his taxes. By the way, it's Republicans who want to defund the IRS, so they have no resources to make sure people pay their taxes. And they're getting him on a gun charge that, if it were up to Republican discretion, would never be prosecuted.
Almost never is. Black rappers have gone to prison for three years over the same exact gun charge.
Okay.
All right, gentlemen. We're just getting warmed up, apparently, in this 45 minutes that we just knocked out. Two more segments to go.
We want equal justice. That's all.
I think everybody does. But, you know, politics infects everything, and it's hard to get to that ultimate goal. All right, gentlemen, quick break, WTMJ. Spending a Friday, as I always do, 9 o'clock hour with Bill and Joe. Bill McCashin, Republican strategist, Joseph Ecke on the Democratic side. Gentlemen, let's do a fun one here before we get to grab bag after the next break. Favorite thing about Summerfest, Bill?
I like the side stages. I mentioned this group last week. I sadly couldn't think of their name. My wife knew it instantly. The band is called The Unexpected with an X in it. They're guys in their 50s and a lady. Started as a high school band in the Waukesha area way back when, and they bring it. They play next Friday night, June 30th, from 8 to 10 at the JoJo's stage. So we like the side stages. We don't necessarily do the big stage like you hoity-toities.
Go to one concert.
Big money.
But we like to people watch. There's no better place to people watch than Summerfest. I mean, they come in all sizes, shapes, colors. It's the dress they wear is
the hairstyles.
The hairstyles, the tattoos. It's awesome, right? And the weather's been really, really good. It's expected to be good this weekend. Hopefully it will be next weekend when we go. Listen, between the people watching and the side stage bands, there's a lot of fun to be had, and it's summer in Wisconsin.
Do you stick around late enough for the fireworks?
No.
When are the fireworks?
Well, I mean, last night they were at 9:30 or 10.
They weren't real late. We stayed till after 10.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
So during the concert.
And I don't know if I don't think they do them every night anymore. They
should, because they're nine nights, right? They're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, three weekends in a row.
Are you still thrilled with fireworks? To me, it's like, I've seen fireworks before.
Wow, I love fireworks.
Really?
What is wrong with you?
They're all the same.
Wow. I was going to shout out, you were mentioning, they're really expanding the food and drink offerings.
Oh, my goodness.
I have a tip for anyone going to the amphitheater. They now have a cocktail called the Central Standard Red Cabin Lemon Honey Bourbon Smash.
That's a lot.
Word of advice, that is not a drink. It is a drink for you and your friends. They literally serve it to you like in the shaker. They put some ice in there. It's got a lid. And then they give you a shot glass over the top. Oh. Do not drink that by yourself.
Oh.
Share it with your friends and neighbors. But boy, is it tasty.
What's the price tag on something like that?
It was $19.50.
That's not bad.
It's really not. I mean, it's like 11 or 12.
$11 for a thing of wine.
Yeah. No, we could. I mean,
you pay $11.50 for beer at...
Right.
Miller Park.
Everybody in our row could have
Fan
a shot.
Field, sorry.
And, you know, we said you couldn't talk about it, but you enjoyed the concert last night at our church. Kickoff of Summerfest.
The acoustics are great. I mean, we've seen everybody from like Chris Stapleton to Tom Petty over the years. I mean,
It's the one concert I wish I would have gone to. Tom Petty.
Yeah, great artist.
I miss that.
Yeah. I enjoy, and it's not, and I love all the music, and I'm like you, Bill. The side stages are amazing. I was walking around yesterday and just hearing these bands I never heard of playing incredible music.
Yeah.
It's a lot of talented people. I love getting something to nosh on and then just people watching.
Yeah.
It is the best. Just the goofiness that is Wisconsin.
Agreed.
I don't know where these people are coming from exactly, but the looks you see.
And they're updating it, and they're trying new things, which I like. I mean, I didn't know there's now like the Soundwave stage, which is sort of like electronica dance music, which is not particular cup of tea.
Out.
Yeah, it's just a huge like dance thing. And yeah. I think if you want to get a younger crowd, you want to get more people out there. Sorry for anybody who was there late, because I remembered after our church we didn't leave right away. I danced with my wife for a little while. I may have looked a little silly, but...
Are you one of those crazy dancers like Elaine on Seinfeld? Arms are going in every direction.
We had a good time.
That's good.
And that's the goal of Summerfest.
That is the goal of Summerfest.
And make some money. All right, we'll take a break. Grab Bag is next on WTMJ.
You got me, right?
There we go. Now I got you.
5 years ago today, Melissa and I had our wedding.
Oh, very nice.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
5 years are the easiest, the hardest, any advice for you?
I'd say the easiest.
Okay. So you married up. You married up.
I know that. Mm. And one of the lifelong friends who spoke and made a toast to that wedding was gracious enough to forgive me on that day for forgetting it was also his birthday. And I vowed to never again forget that. The day of our wedding and the day of his birthday are the same one. So a happy birthday to my friend who wants to remain nameless.
Oh.
What he said was, can you shout out loyal listener Grandma Sue in West Allis? She loves the show. She loves listening to you guys.
Wow.
So Grandma Sue.
Grandma
love
Sue.
From your grandson and from me.
Is that the dude you were in the picture with?
Yes.
Okay. So do I know him?
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Why? What's with the anonymity?
He's an important guy.
He is an important guy. Don't you want to be more important?
Yeah. Happy birthday, buddy.
All right, happy birthday. And congratulations on your anniversary. I didn't know it was 5 years.
Time flies when you're having
fun. It does.
Yeah.
It does. And you are having fun. Bill McCosh and Grab.
So your wife used to have a baseball hat in her Twitter profile picture. Does she still? She wears a baseball hat better than you do. I'm just going to say that.
She does a lot better than you.
I know your wife. I like your wife.
She's cuter than you, too.
She is. My shout out is to Bob Lang and his staff at the Legislative Fiscal Bureau. For the listeners that don't understand how the process works in Madison, Bob Lang is an institution. He's been around the Capitol for 40 years. Doesn't matter who the governor is. Doesn't matter which party's in control of the Senate or the Assembly. It doesn't matter who the co-chairman of Joint Finance are. Bob Lang and his team make sure the numbers balance out. He makes sure whichever side is in the lead at that point in time gets what they want done in a manner that the state taxpayers can afford and is fiscally responsible. And the guy doesn't get enough credit for the work he does, but he's an institution in Madison, widely, maybe the most respected individual in Madison. So hat tip to Bob Lang and all the staff at the Legislative Fiscal Bureau.
Don't you love the people that do the real work?
Yeah.
And he doesn't want the credit. They just do the work. They just show up every day, do the work. They don't care who's in charge or all the political nonsense and BS. They just do the work. I love that.
Bill, one of those Republicans who loves state employees. You love to see it. You'll love to see it.
I was one for 10 years.
Yeah. Is that a rarity? Is that what you're saying?
Republicans embracing public workers?
Can't we all get along?
Republicans gave big increases to state employees yesterday.
They got a raise?
4% and 2%.
That's great.
How generous is that?
Right?
A part of the GOP budget I can agree with.
Where's all the hand-wringing on that one? Remember the late at night child care tax credit story? I didn't even get to that one. Come on.
It's not great.
Pandemic funding. Now that's going to be, we have to like defend pandemic funding?
No,
we don't. It has to continue forever?
We don't.
Come on.
No, we don't.
And we had a $7 billion surplus. If you are a parent with kids who need childcare,
I
would be a little nervous.
We are two-thirds of the way through the budget process. The final third is Governor Evers' vetoes. Let's see how it shakes out.
Yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about next week, maybe?
No.
No. You're going to be gone. Who's gone next week?
I'm around.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm around.
Maybe I'm gone. On that note.
Happy weekend.
Yeah, happy weekend. Bill McCosh and Joseph Peck. We do it every Friday, Political Power Hour, right here. On WTMJ. News is next.
breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And welcome, 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 10 o'clock hour on this Friday edition. Good to be here after a couple days off. Sitting in the chair opposite me is the host, the star of the Wisconsin Afternoon News program, John McCure. Hi, John.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm on the big show. I'm on the Steve Scafidi show.
You know,
I made it.
They don't let me say the big show.
Well, I'll say it for you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm on the big show,
and
the Scafidi show.
We have some studio guests, so hi to all of you as you listen and to what we're going to talk about. So I was on Summerfest grounds yesterday, and I know you're broadcasting live in the afternoon, and I saw you talking to a TV guy, and I go, what's this about? I walk up, you tell me.
Terrible story with Stars and Stripes Honor Flight that everybody's covering, and we broke yesterday. Unfortunate story, but an important story for our community, because Stars and Stripes Honor Flight flies veterans, of course, to Washington, D.C., and the community has been behind this for more than 10 years. And a volunteer, a former volunteer, according to prosecutors, stole almost $100,000 from the organization by holding events like 5Ks. I'm raising money for Honor Flight, and then not giving the organization any of the money.
So I assume this has never happened before.
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
So how was this detected?
So this is a former volunteer who we're all familiar with. So we all know this Joni Nugay in the organization. She stopped volunteering a few years ago, said, you know what? I'm going to instead start my own nonprofit, and I'm going to raise money for Honor Flight. I'm going to do 5Ks. I'm going to solicit in the community. So she went off and did her own thing, occasionally gave us a little bit of money, us meaning the organization. And it became clear when we looked at her social media that she was holding up pictures of big fake checks.
I saw that.
For Honor Flight. And we said, we're not getting any of that money. So we tried to resolve it with her. We reached out to her. And she said, I'm going to get it to you, or I haven't gotten my checks yet, or whatever. Well, this continued for a period of time. And Honor Flight is such good stewards of all the money that's raised on our behalf that finally we said, we got to get the authorities involved. And so as soon as we knew definitively that we weren't getting the money that she had raised, we reached out to police. And then, you know, it's a long process. They investigated, but that's how we became aware of it. They got involved. And that's where we are today with a 26-page criminal complaint. I mean, this is
serious. You're holding up in the studio here. So a couple questions. So you became aware of it. You became aware of it.
Yep.
Did you report it to police, or were they already aware of it?
No, we reported it to police. Police were not aware of it. We reported it to police right as our accountants became aware that something weird was going on, and then they took it from there.
I've heard stories like this before, unrelated to Honor Flight or other organizations that I'm a part of, but where people do these things, they're almost like independent contractors. They say they're doing something for an organization. They're doing the opposite.
Yep.
How widespread do you think this is?
I think probably more than we know, unfortunately.
Especially for something like this.
And if you're a big organization like Stars and Stripes Honor Flight, you know, with lots of money and a high profile in the community, you have a lot of people that come forward and say they want to help you. And not all those people have the purest intentions. I think it happens not with Honor Flight, but in general, to your point, in our community, more than we know, because it's hard to keep track of it, and there's a lot of people out there, unfortunately, who aren't great people.
So I always look for an opportunity here or a positive. So your organization, you detected this. What can you teach other organizations about situations like this? Because it's all happening all around us all the time.
Ask a lot of questions. Be really protective of your brand. You know, and we are protective of our brand, but double check, triple check, button it down. Ask a lot of questions about the intentions of the people that say they want to work for you. Because everybody says, well, I'm going to raise money for you. She raised, Steve, more than $100,000, and it ends up, according to prosecutors, she spent it on spa treatments. She spent it on high-end clothing. She spent $600 at a chiropractor, $2,500 at an organization called Moms in Heels, which is entrepreneur school for moms. I mean, she spent lots and lots and lots of money that people donated to fly veterans.
That's the thing that gets me, and I heard you yesterday when you broke the story on your show. Sad, disappointed, angry.
Yeah.
Those all apply because you are, having been a guardian, having been on an honor flight, there's nothing better. And it's a chance. My vet, who's no longer with us, got a chance to see those monuments before he died. He got to touch the wall.
Yep.
New names on the wall. And to take that away from how many, like, let's say it's 80,000 that she absconded with.
Yeah.
How many vets is that?
Hundreds, several hundred. Several hundred veterans. And I wanted, as I was preparing to come on your show, I wanted to ask you that because you have been on an honor flight.
Yeah.
yesterday, part of our show, we opened up the phone lines and heard from people who have. What's your reaction when you hear you were on an honor flight? You experienced it.
That pisses me off. I don't know.
Yep, me too.
Other, you're taking an opportunity for these individuals who put their lives on the line because you want to go get a spa treatment or sign up for some stupid class when you said you're going to donate so that hundreds, your words, of men and women, right?
Yep.
Go to Washington and see something that is amazing. I've been to Washington, D.C. 100 times. Every time I go, I see the monuments. I had the opportunity to take my wife, who had never been there. She was blown away. And you're giving those folks who put their lives on the line an opportunity to see that up close and personal. And in the case of my vet, see the names of the people that he served with and lost their lives.
Yep. I was just on an honor flight. There was just an honor flight.
Yeah, last weekend,
your producer,
right?
Brandon.
Yes.
Was helping us at the airport. He volunteered. These men and women wore the flag on their shoulder. They didn't just talk about the flag. They wore it. They have their names on chains around their neck as they tromped through trenches in battle. And to take them to see their monuments, like you did with your veteran, is the sole mission of Honor Flight, to celebrate them, to let them know that we care and we don't take it for granted, and for someone to take advantage of the good name of Stars and Stripes Honor Flight is just atrocious. It's awful.
I know you keep us posted on this. There'll be a court date at some point, and I know you'll keep us up to date on the story. Thanks for the reporting here, but also for sharing, you know, what I love about the Honor Flight. It's just a tremendous organization. Your directors, all the volunteers, you do it so well.
Hey, I appreciate that. You've been seeing it firsthand, so that means a lot. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, buddy.
You got it. Thanks,
all right,
Steve.
Quick break here. We're going to be joined by CJ Safer on the Republican tax cut. What that means, what that looks like, after this on WTMJ. Thanks for tuning in on this Friday edition. Talk some politics in the first hour. We also mentioned briefly the Republican proposal tax cut built into this budget, cooked into the cake or pie, whatever term you want to use. Joining me on the phone line, the president of the Institute for Reform and Government, CJ Safer, who is really good at breaking down these big concepts. In this case, a plan to cut income taxes by 15% on average in the state of Wisconsin. Welcome, CJ.
Steve, happy Friday. How are we doing?
I am doing great on this Friday. So give us your sense of what this means for Wisconsin taxpayers and residents, if the governor accepts it.
Well, this is a plan that so many of us have been waiting for. It's like that final linchpin of the state budget. A process that really has been going on since January, and we're finally here. As you and I have discussed for probably about a year, Wisconsin has an unprecedented state surplus, which means that the state government has collected $7 billion more than what it spent. So naturally, a lot of us have called on for really, really big tax cuts. And, you know, we've talked about getting rid of the income tax. We've talked about a flat tax. But the reality in a divided government is not everybody gets what they want. So yesterday, what the Republicans put out yesterday afternoon is what I think is a very common sense but bold tax plan. It's a $4.5 billion tax cut plan. $3.5 billion just in income tax cuts alone. That would make it one of the biggest income tax cuts in decades. I mean, maybe ever, but I have not, you know, kind of gone through the entire history of tax cuts. But it is a very major tax cut. It impacts every single group, every single earner. They go after the top rate, which we should discuss. They decrease the top rate from 7.6 to 6.5.
It also drops from four to three brackets, correct?
Four to a three brackets, mm-hmm. which in our opinion, more simple is better. It also gets us closer to, I think, to what a more efficient and more equal tax plan. So we were very much in favor of it. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of the energy and attention is going to be focused on the top rates. And I think this is something that the Democrats have already started to critique. I think it's a mistake.
Governor came out with some strong words, believes that if we deliver, this is his exact quote, if we deliver tax relief, it should be real, responsible, and targeted to the middle class. I would argue, okay, so where are you defining the middle class? I had this conversation away from the show yesterday, last night. It shouldn't be unexpected or breaking news that the people who pay the most taxes are going to have the most benefit. Or am I missing something?
Yeah, breaking news. Yeah, right. No, look, I mean, I would even first thing take it a step back, right? So this under the Republican tax plan, those that are making $13,000 a year to $300,000 a year will receive a 17% cut in their taxes. So that is, I mean, so we are, I mean, even broadly defining the middle class by collapsing it into that one bracket, you, a lot of people across the state are going to receive a significant tax cut. Now, when you look at the people that are in the top rate, those that are making over $300,000, they're going to receive, again, the rate's going to go down by about 1.2%. But that's a really big deal, but that's really important. One, for the reason that this is tax relief for job creators, but also 9 of 10 small businesses in Wisconsin pay the top individual income tax rate. 9 of every 10 small businesses in Wisconsin pay that top rate. That's barbershops. That's startups in tech, that's restaurants, that's coffee shops. I mean, really, the strength, the backbone of the small town economies, the backbone of really like the state is these small businesses. They get immediate tax relief that they need, so then they can go back, they can increase wages, they could expand, they could lower prices. But really, we're just putting money back into their pockets so then they can decide what to do with it. I think the Democrats that are so quick to criticize that, I don't think fully appreciate really the breadth of who would be receiving tax relief here.
CJ Safer joining us, president of the Institute for Reforming Government. So now it's in Governor Evers' hands. What do we expect he will do with it?
So if you think back, February, Governor Evers rolled out his budget. So this process has been going on for 6 or 7 months. Evers's budget had a huge mix of middle class tax cuts and tax increases, especially on manufacturers. As we discussed, the Wisconsin legislature got rid of that. They introduced the plan yesterday, which I think quadruples the Evers tax cut. So now this entire plan, it left joint finance last night. There's going to be scoring and debates about the Republican tax plan in the legislature next week. Hopefully it'll pass the Assembly and the Senate probably in the next 1 to 2 weeks. I think the goal is still to get this all done and wrapped up by 4th of July. It'll go to Governor Evers' desk, assuming it's passed. And Governor Evers will have 10 days to decide whether to sign it, to veto it, or to partial veto it. And look, I mean, we already came out, IRG Action, our issue advocacy partner, we came out, we're doing a petition drive aimed at working class families across the state, telling both Republicans and Democrats to call Governor Evers and tell him to sign it. I think this is something that in divided government, you know, it's not elimination of the income tax, which is what we advocate for. But I think this is also a common sense, middle of the road plan that benefits every single Wisconsinite across the state. Now, I think there's no reason that this shouldn't get bipartisan support.
I'm just looking at some of the numbers here. If the average reduction is 15%, that means about $573 per filer. That's pretty significant money coming back. And oh, by the way, it's retroactive to the beginning of this year. So you'll have the entire year of benefit.
Right. And again, the numbers will continue to be crunched. You know, you're going to see some things from Fiscal Bureau. You'll see some things from the economists at University of Wisconsin-Crow. But right now, they're saying that the average Wisconsin taxpayer will save $573 under this plan, which, again, is quadruple the relief that Evers proposed. And I think that it would be incumbent on Evers to take the win here, do what he did 2 years ago, and, you know, hold hands and say, you know, he can obviously, he'll then take credit for it. But I think this is something that is for really for the good of the state. This is real, real money. I mean, look, we're still coming out of COVID. We're still coming off of the fiscal and economic impacts from all the shutdowns. We have significant worker shortage issues. We have inflation. And, you know, we still potentially could be looking at a looming recession in the not-so-distant future. I think this is a plan that really the state needs. And, you know, I'd love to see him hurry up and pass it in a bipartisan fashion.
Well, as they say, we shall see what happens. CJ Safer, president of the Institute for Reforming Government and an advocate for just a complete redo of how we tax people in the state of Wisconsin. This is a good step, I think. We'll see what the governor does. Thank you, CJ.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll take a break here. Lots more to get to. Don't forget, we got virtual baseball coming up, sponsored by Siding Unlimited. That's at 10:35. Steve of the World, we can review. Feels good to be back in the chair after a couple days off. Did you miss me? I hope so. Quick break.
The grass is cut. The hot dogs are hot. And the beer is ice cold.
Right indeed. Oh, baby, get up!
It's time for virtual baseball on the Steve Scafidi Show. Brought to you by Siding Unlimited.
All right, weather's fantastic. The field is cut. Our players are all queuing up around home plate. Let's meet our players first, then we'll see what the ground rules are. Teresa joins us from Heartland. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
How are you on this Friday?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. So tell us about Teresa from Heartland quickly in 30 seconds or less.
Love to travel, love sports, and love and life. How's that?
Those are three really good ones. I share all of those with you. So let's find out who you're playing today. His name is Tony. He's from Fond du Lac. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Steve.
How are you?
I'm good today.
All right, tell me the Tony from Fond du Lac story.
Oh, Tony from Fond du Lac, happy with three kids, couple grandsons.
There you go.
I work for Redbox as a service tech, and I got a really nice girlfriend, so I'm doing good.
Give me your first. Good. Let's give her a shout out. What's her first name?
Becky.
Becky. Hi, Becky. Good luck to Tony. Good luck to Teresa. Let's assemble around home plate as we hear the ground rules from our illustrious producer, Brandon Snide. Go, take it away, Brandon.
All right, welcome in you two. We got two players, of course. You just heard from Teresa from Heartland. She's going to be serving as our home team, and Tony, as you just heard, he is going to be serving as our visiting team. Each of them will get a separate set of 10 highlights. Each set includes an equal number of hits, and you guessed it, an equal number of outs. They are all numbered 1 through 10. Each of you get 5 selections. After those 5 selections, we only record the hit in the highlight, not the runs scored in the highlight. After those 5 swings, the number of runs tallied up becomes your final score, and if there is a tie, there seems to be a trend this year with ties, the home team, in this case, Teresa, will try to walk it off. She is the first caller. She is the home team.
All right, and thanks to Siding Unlimited, there's an opportunity to get it into the June drawing for a $500 gift card as well as a WTMJ prize package. All right, Tony, you're the away team. You will bat first. You heard Brandon lay it out for you. 10 possible choices. You can only make 5. What's your first choice?
Number one.
Ooh, number one, we have Luis Urias.
1-1 pitch. Ground ball off the glove of Ortiz near the middle. Bay has it. Throws the first in time.
Oh, robbed him of a base hit.
Yeah, hit the ball hard on that one, but unfortunately it is an out. Tony, 4 more chances. Number two. Pick number two.
Number 10.
Number 10, we have Christian Yelich.
2-1 pitch. Ground ball right back to Matzik. He's going to throw to second for one. Back to first in time. Long's going to score for the
It's not Tony, the best start.
Tony, that's a proverbial, hard for me to say, easy for me to say, rough start. Apparently Greg Matzik playing second base there. All right, so Tony, you got 3 more at-bats. You've already got rid of 2 outs. Don't get the third one. Let's score some runs.
How about number 3?
Number 3, we have William Contreras.
2-0.
line to right, and it is going to be a base hit and get by the right fielder. Uh-oh. Contreras
there
is
we
on
go.
The move.
Come on.
He's at second. He's not stopping.
Keep running.
He's headed for third. He's in with a trouble.
In there.
There we go. All important base
moving
runner.
For a catcher.
Man on the corner. Two more at-bats. Let's get that guy in. Let's score some more runs, Tony. What's your fourth pick?
Number seven.
Number seven, we have Bryce Terrain.
Here it is. Bouncer back up the middle and played nicely by Edmund, and he threw him out.
Man,
that's
tough. Tony. Tony scored zero runs. I don't. Has that happened?
He's got one more, I believe.
No, that's three outs.
First, was it?
First two are out. Yeah, that's it. Well, we're gonna give one more choice. Score that run, buddy. Come on. What's your last pick?
Let's go with number five.
Number five, Ramiro Tapia.
And the pitch. Hit to right center.
There you go.
Warning track off the wall and gone.
There you go.
All right, so the great benefit of playing this game is it's not the outs, it's the at-bats. He had five at-bats. He scored two runs. All right, so Tony, you redeemed yourself a little bit there. We'll see what Teresa has up her sleeve and on her bat. Teresa, you have 10 possible selections. Five at-bats. Got to get two to tie, three to walk them off. What's your first pick?
Number two.
Number two, Jesse Winker.
3-2 pitch. Fly ball deep center field. Thomas going back at the track. It is gone.
Ooh. No. Teresa's not, wasting any time. One run on the board. All right, Teresa, so you scored one. You got four at-bats left. What is your next choice?
Number three.
Number three, Bryce Terrain.
Here it is. Bouncer back up the middle and played nicely by Edmund, and he threw him out.
All right.
So the leadoff double, stranded.
Still one on the board. Three at-bats left. Got to get to two. Three walks him off. Walks off Tony. What's your third choice?
Number six.
Number six, Christian Yelich.
3-1, line back up the middle and into center field. Weimer streaking around third. He's going to score. Perkins on his way to third. It's an RBI single for Yelich, and it's 3-1 Brewers.
All right, we got a base runner.
Got a
two
runner.
Two at-bats left. Still trailing 2-1 to Tony.
Couple outs on the board. Got a couple home runs, though,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, so you got opportunity there. And with opportunity creates adversity creates. I'm all over the. See, that's what taking a day off.
It's like your Monday, but it's Friday.
Yeah, I'm mixing everything up. All
one
right,
night at Summerfest.
Teresa's sharpest attack. She's gonna do this. Teresa, what's your fourth pick?
Number nine.
Number nine, Andrew Monasterio.
1-0, high fly ball, deep center field. Benson retreating back onto the warning track at the wall.
Oh!
It'll fly.
He just walked
the ball. The ball just kept carrying. Andrew Monasterio.
Two-run homer. That means Teresa beats Tony 3-2. Tony, thanks for playing virtual baseball, sponsored by Siding Unlimited.
Thank you. Congratulations, Teresa.
All right. You and Becky have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Teresa, you just won virtual baseball WTMJ prize package on its way and a chance to win a $500 gift card thanks to Siding Unlimited. How are you feeling right now?
Thank you.
All right, stay in the line. Producer Brandon will get all your important information. Just more fun with baseball, the virtual variety right here on WTMJ. Take us to break, Brandon.
Next time I try tofu, I'm taking the wrapper off. Darn it. Anyway, we're back with you again.
Congrats to Teresa. She was our winner on virtual baseball. Do it every Friday, 10:35. Thanks to Signing Unlimited, our great presenters, sponsors. And I'm serious. Every month, a drawing to win a $500 gift card thanks to Signing Unlimited. So, and it's funny because I just had this conversation. I was talking to somebody, and they just had new signing put on their house. And it's one of our partners here at WTMJ. The Tihan's Nursery, which is where I get all my plants. Great, great local business. Rawson Avenue in Oak Creek. And they got new siding. Oh, where'd you get it? I saw him at an event on Saturday. He goes, oh, Siding Unlimited. And I go, I love the partner-to-partner love you got going on there. Hopefully Siding Unlimited goes to Tihan's and gets their plants. They're beautiful hanging baskets. And they're
beautiful, gorgeous tomato plants. And I was asking Tim and Sharon, his wife, lovely wife, about their San Marzano plants. And he told me that since we started talking about them, they're selling a lot of these things. And he was basically down to like 0.03 of what he had left that started. And I walked in at the first week, second week maybe, and everything's, you know, plush and gorgeous. His baskets are some of the best I've ever seen. And now there's just basically a few things left, and that's it. Then they do their outside stuff, plant all their outside crop, and then we'll sell those at some point. But it's such a process. And the interesting thing for me was, anybody has a nursery knows or been to a nursery knows they have these massive greenhouses. So, and I've talked about this on the show, I am going from a very large garden, which is doing very well. Somebody asked about it on the text line earlier. Yeah, it's doing fantastic. We're back to hauling water again because it's not raining, but so that part's not fun. But everything is growing tremendously. We've got the start of a bunch of little tomatoes, my cabbage plants, Brussels sprouts, kohlrabi. My potatoes are almost a foot high already, the plants. I love this. But it all starts with a greenhouse for me because I don't grow my own plants from seed. I go to Tihan's and they present me with these beautiful, gorgeous plants, and I just have to nurture them and take care of them. But this is the last year of the big garden. The individual who owns the land that I garden on, it's not my property, is building a beautiful house on it. And I'm going to go from that reality to the reality of a small greenhouse on my property at home. And I'm excited about it because it's a whole different kind of gardening, right? And I want to trick it out and make it look, you know, kind of cool looking and, you know, a little bit funky and also fit into the landscaping, which my wife Kathy and I pay a lot of attention to. And so I'm gonna evolve my growing from, in the case of this year, 120 tomato plants to maybe 5. Now everyone asked me this question. How, like, you guys can and stuff, what are you gonna do? Well, if we really want to can to that volume, I can buy tomatoes. Local farms, they sell by the bushel. I don't know if everybody knows that, but lots of places you can go and buy a bushel of tomatoes. And if we really want to can to that extent, we'll do that. I'll miss it. But in this year, I think I saw a local weather person say we're 6.5, somewhere around 6 inches lower than normal on rainfall. And I will be honest with you, the areas of my garden that I don't water where the plants are deserts. And then you have this really rich area where the plant is, where I've been watering, where it's been fertilized. It's like night and day. And the compacted walkway that I have down the center, I have to post a picture of this. I haven't done one in a while of what the garden looks like. Every year it's different. I kind of stagger things around, move and rotate crops. It is a hard path going down the center of the garden. I mean, like almost like if you paved it. That's how hard it is. That's how dry it is. So we need rain, folks. All right, after the break, I got a little bit of time before the top of the hour. Don't forget, it's Steve Ruled the World after the top of the hour news. And today, this is kind of an oldie but goodie. I was thinking about this, and it's not related to my relationship with my neighbors, who are all great. How to tell if your neighbor's nuts. It's a real thing. I will give you a roadmap, a guidebook, a pamphlet, an audio whatever to deciphering the weird conduct of your neighbors. That's coming up at 11:08. All right, quick break. I want to talk about the, now we know, imploded-exploded sub ? We don't know exactly what happened. And some of the bad takes I heard and saw related to that story. We'll do that after this on WTMJ.
Let me just get this straight about the whole Titanic debacle. You have a small gaggle of obscenely rich men participating in tragedy tourism by going down to the Titanic, in which a disproportionate amount of poor people died in the incident due to the greed and classism of the upper class. And these men have now become a macabre spectacle that they themselves were originally oohing and aahing. Because now nobody is ever going to talk about anything regarding these five except the awful, viscerally terrifying way that they probably died. It's irony at its peak.
Yeah, that's mind-numbingly dumb. And that's what passes for, like, criticism and hot takes now. And I don't even know who that is. I picked it off social media. Some moron. Look, a bad thing happened to some people. And I was listening to the coverage. And they'd weave in some, you know, apparently some thought leaders who said, you know what? This is like overprivileged rich people. We don't. They don't deserve our compassion. Really, that's how we're going to judge people now? By how much money they have? Too much of this goes on in today's world. Somebody that has money, considered rich, whatever that means in today's world, whatever that means to you. We have less compassion when they're in a horrible situation, which this was, because they had money, means. Look, do I wish everyone could just do whatever they want? They could go on a vacation to wherever, Hawaii, just pick a place, regardless of their means? Sure. But that's not the world we live in. Some people have bigger houses than other people. Some people have apartments versus houses. The world's not fair. We strive to have fairness. We strive to make things as equitable and as fair as possible. But we don't just hand out stuff. And that this reeks of that silly. And I don't want to condemn young people. This is a younger person who we played. Just this weird desire to have a hot take that's going to get her some attention. And yes, she did get played on my show, but I want to point out to you that this is the way we should not be thinking. Whether they were rich or not doesn't matter. Compassion isn't weighed by how much money you have in your wallet or your bank. Right? And to hear these weird sort of like write-offs of people because they have means and they're able to afford to go on this $250,000 excursion to the Titanic and died, that you don't care about them because they're rich? Look, it's a different question completely. Should they have gone there? I'll agree. No. We've seen the Titanic. Why would we risk lives with a still questionable technology that may or may not keep you safe when you go down there to satisfy this weird thrill for, you know, like an hour spent, you know, submarining around the Titanic? What haven't we learned? What haven't we seen already? And I feel especially sad for the youngest victim, the son of one of the other victims, who was around 19 years old and apparently did not want to go on this, and they left on Father's Day. And it sounds like, according to a lot of the reports now, that this vehicle, this submarine, may have imploded or exploded as soon as it got down there. You know, and the fact that a billionaire was one of the victims, I don't care. I can say that they shouldn't go there, but I also have compassion for the people that died. However they died, quickly or slowly, doesn't matter. I have compassion. Rich or poor, also have compassion. If there's one thing that social media has done, it's given us a plethora of idiots like this who espouse nonsensical takes, hot or otherwise, to get likes or clicks or whatever. She's another moron. That's all I need to know. After the break for news, If Steve Ruled the World, a special how to tell if your neighbor is nuts. A little bit of greatest hits in here. We got some great music as well, some fun clips. That's all coming up after the news here on WTMJ.
Breaking down the biggest stories, talking about what really matters, and bringing you the biggest forum to let your voice be heard. Now, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, here's Steve Scafidi.
And, well, there we go. Now I can hear myself. Whew. You miss a couple days of work, everything changes. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour, Friday edition. I'm off 2 days, work 1 day, off 2 days. I love that schedule. No complaints. Hopefully you had a great week as we wind it down. So I often debate myself. I say to myself, Steve, what do you want to talk about as part of Is Steve the World? And, you know, I've got great neighbors for the most part. And we We're very conscious of our yards, which is a good thing. I spent the last 2 days in my yard, for those who are landscapers, re-edging all my landscape beds. I mean, tedious work, but it looks fantastic. Now just waiting for the mulch and the all the pressures on my mulch guy to get that in, and said it's coming next week, so we shall see. So I thought, because I love the topic, the relationship issue between neighbors, right? So we have extremes in this. We have everybody loves their neighbor, right? You know, being a faith guy, I think that's important. Loving your neighbor, appreciating them, understanding there's differences. And then there's like the hate your neighbor folks. But there's also that nuance of they're just crazy or nuts. So today's edition of Is Steve Ruled the World, how to tell if your neighbor is nuts. First one has to do with grass. You know what's coming. Three simple words. Cut your grass. You look at your neighbor's yard and the grass is higher than a carload of Wisconsinites coming back from an Illinois weed trip. They're either stoners or they're nuts. Now, you would think this would be fairly straightforward, right? You only have to cut it for, what, 4 months out of the year here in Wisconsin? Chances are if you have a house, you have a lawnmower. Those two things kind of go together. Matter of fact, here in Wisconsin, most people probably have more than one. Because we never throw anything away. Let's just say there's a lot of unofficial junkyards in the old Badger State. And most of this stuff is not a treasure. American Pickers isn't coming to your garage anytime soon. They'd walk in and go, this is junk. Let's go. So let's focus on a basic fact. And you've heard me say this before, but this is a greatest hits. And I'm going to give you this again because it's important that we understand this. And some of my neighbors, as great as they are, still don't understand this. Grass grows on an irregular or inconsistent basis. If it's rainy, it grows faster. If it's dry, it may go dormant. It will go brown. Then you don't have to cut it, other than the weeds. So nature has already built in a natural break. A drought like we're in here in southeastern Wisconsin, real or the scientific definition or just what feels real, means no grass cutting, or at least not as often. I don't care if you watch NASCAR every Sunday. When you need it, cut your grass. I don't care if the mosquitoes are bad, cut your grass. I don't care if you want to spend all your free time watching Fox TV or MSNBC or whatever it is, cut your grass. I don't even care if you run out of Busch Lights, cut your grass. If you don't, well, you just may be nuts.
Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
Are we clear?
If Steve ruled the world.
I don't know if you're like me, and chances are you're probably not. But have you run across a neighbor who treats their property as their own personal junkyards? I alluded to this earlier. Old tires, remnants of old landscaping projects. And by the way, quick aside, I love the enthusiasm for a new landscaping project, but when you commit to a landscaping project, that's a lifelong commitment, or at least as long as you own that house. What looks fantastic year one often looks pretty horrific in year five. Constant upkeep, re-edge, remulch, thin your plants. All right. So, we've all seen these, right? Broken down snowmobiles, bikes, some cases vehicles that haven't moved in decades, flat tires. Now, some people might say, my yard, my rules. Technically, that's incorrect. Local ordinances have plenty of restrictions on what you can have on display in eyesight of your neighbors. Here's an idea. Most communities have recycling centers or garbage facilities where you can drop off all this old junk for free or for a very minimal charge. Since I'm all about doing good deeds and paying it forward, how about turning off like the latest episode of The Bachelorette for an hour, get out of the chair, offer to help your neighbor load up his treasures. What's the worst thing that can happen? They say no? Well, actually, the worst thing would be they lose their minds, tell you to mind your business, and threaten to blow your head off, but let's be positive. Maybe, just maybe, it's a chance to thaw that relationship. And if they do end up going all deliverance on you, you know what's coming, don't you? Well, then you know they're nuts. Question answered.
world.
Always be the Burt Reynolds character, not the Ned Beatty character. That's my advice to you. I don't know about you, but I've noticed that people aren't as carefree as they used to be. It used to be people would just put their favorite politician's bumper sticker on their cars. Then it was cardboard lawn signs. Now, of course, it's not uncommon to see sheets of plywood on your neighbor's front lawn, hand-painted with clever slogans like Let's Go Brandon or F this and F that. And seriously, how hard is it to spell the F word, really? And the lack of originality in these things is rather stunning. But that on its own is not a guarantee that your neighbor's nuts. But if you have a neighbor engaged in this exercise of homemade signdom, and they've installed a camera system to monitor not their house, but their sign, you might just have a crazy neighbor on your hands. Now, I'm all about freedom of speech and all that goes with it, but freedom of crazy, that's just stepping all over the Constitution. If you have one of those plywood sign-loving neighbors, maybe play this song very loud on your car radio every time you see him in the yard.
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. Crazy for feeling so blue.
If Steve ruled the world.
Patsy Cline, everybody. A word on neighbors and their lawn decorations. Now, I'm a big fan of the stone deer, the bird bass. I have one. Even the fake waterfalls, if done properly, they look great. All in. Here's the list of things that don't qualify as lawn decorations. Any political sign when the election for said sign has already taken place. Any holiday decorations that is more than a month out from the actual celebration of the holiday. Nope. No leaving the icicle lights hanging on your gutter. I have a neighbor who has them up right now. It's late June, for Pete's sake. Don't make me come over there. Shopping carts. I don't care if you're filling with planted flowers. Non-starter with me. Pieces of furniture that you've adapted to be landscaping features in your yard. That includes beds, dressers, bookshelves, toilets, and all appliances, really. See my earlier comment on junkyards. And enough with the theme park treatments of your front yard when it comes to Halloween, and your other holidays. There are plenty of places we can drive to if we want to see a real-life reenactment of the nativity scene. Or the stories of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Nightmare on Elm Street. I actually like Halloween, the candy part, not your lame attempt to recreate a Hollywood movie set. And yes, your yard can be an extension of your home, but it shouldn't feature the same things you actually sleep on, store your food in, or in the case of the toilet, well, you know where I'm going with that. If you got a neighbor who imagines themselves a Hollywood set decorator, there's a very good chance they may be as crazy as that My Pillow guy, which if you don't know, is about a 13 on a 1 to 10 scale.
Taken down because we have all the election fraud with these Dominion machines. We have 100% proof. And then when they took it down about 3 weeks ago, I put it back up. My personal, I put it. It was a
Mike, thank you very much. Mike, you're talking about machines that we at Newsmax have not been able to verify any of those kinds of allegations. We just want to let people know that there's nothing substantive that we've seen. And let me read you something. There.
If Steve ruled the world.
Man, when Newsmax shuts you down, you know you've really gone to the road to crazy town. Here's a few quick tips of figuring out if your neighbor's crazy. If they cut their grass after midnight, probably crazy. If they leave their garage open 24/7, 365, and then complain about having mice, rats, or even worse in their houses, good chance they're crazy. If they argue about politics at a neighborhood block party where no one even mentioned anything about politics, most likely crazy. If they decide to pack up their family, move to a rural part of the state because they feel the government is out to get them, well, congrats, your crazy neighbor has moved out of your neighborhood, but in all likelihood, their new neighbors will also think they're crazy, and even though they live a mile away, will still be disappointed a crazy person has moved close to them. Last but not least, if your neighbor is fond of massive fireworks displays on days not related to the 4th of July, they could be crazy. Or just a fan of spending insane amounts of money for something that lasts like 20 minutes. What recession? Have you seen the numbers for fireworks, alcohol, or theme parks? Off the charts. And if your neighbor is a fan of all three at the same time, that is all the proof you need.
Across the sky.
If Steve ruled the world.
Speaking of neighbors who are just really bad at being neighbors, or quite frankly, owning anything that involves maintenance and upkeep, my apologies to Jeff Foxworthy here, but you know you're a redneck when your pickup truck is parked, not on the driveway, but on your front lawn. You know you're a redneck when the lawn service companies don't even leave a flyer on your front door. You know you're a redneck when you can't even find your lawnmower in your yard and you don't have a shed or a garage on your property. You know you're a redneck when your wood fence is actually wood pallets stacked end to end on the neighbor's property line. One more, if you actually mow around the tipped over cooler from a summer party that's been laying in your backyard for 3 months, probably a redneck, but let's go to the expert.
If you've been on television more than five times describing what the tornado sounded like, you might be a redneck. If you've ever cut your grass and found a car, you might be a redneck. If your dad walks you to school because you're in the same grade, you might be a redneck.
It's Steve. Rule the world.
Oh, he's the best at it. Last but not least, really the last but not least, if you ever happen to be invited over to your neighbor's house for a get-together and you see any of the following things on display, run as far and as fast as you can. A Confederate flag flying on their front yard flagpole. You know where the American flag is supposed to be? And any recent shipping boxes lying around which have MyPillow branding prominently displayed on them. On its face, that indicates bad judgment. Best night's sleep, my... And if the neighbor offers you a drink, or in the vernacular of the crazy, a little something to take the edge off, check the seal on the bottle. If it's readily apparent the seal is broken, slowly back up, thank them for their hospitality, and run for the front door. Chances are you'll get there before they do because they're probably drunk. Good luck. That's this week's
If Steve Ruled the World.
Take us a break. Happy Friday, everybody. Off to the weekend. Weather here looks fantastic. Hopefully it's great where you are. Thanks for taking the time to find our show. Any or all of our shows are available on our podcast page, WTMJ.com, or wherever you get your podcasts, including the If Steve Ruled the World, which was brilliant today, if I pat myself on the back. How to Tell If Your Neighbor Is Nuts. As I said, a shortened special edition of... Ask Steve Anything. Since we have a few moments here before we hand it off to Jeff at the top of the hour. Let's go to Linda, who's first up calling from the beautiful city of Brookfield. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful on this Friday. Looking forward to the weekend.
Good.
What's your Great. Question?
Well, I know that you had cable TV and mm-hmm. you dropped it mm-hmm. and you switched through, was it Fubo or YouTube?
YouTube TV.
YouTube TV. How yeah. do you like it?
I love it. But I'm always cautious with people when they ask me a lot about this. So I love it. It is much cheaper. Now, there are some right. limits. You don't have access to the Brewers broadcasts, which is, for a lot of people, a deal breaker. So I just listen on the radio because we, of course, carry the games on WTMJ. And Bob Uecker right. is the best. The other thing is, it's not as easy to use as like a cable box. For example, cable box, you punch in whatever your favorite channel number is, five. It doesn't right. work. It doesn't work that way on YouTube. You go to a guide, you press a button on your remote, it takes you to a guide. You scroll up and down, and then you pick the channel that you want to watch. It's a little bit more cumbersome, but the savings. Okay. I mean, I cut my costs by two thirds.
Okay.
Signal quality is great.
Do you get regular channels?
Yes, get the local TV channels, which I love. The picture quality is fantastic. I get some channels that I didn't get on UVerse. So for me, it's a win.
Right. Can you record?
You can do all of that, yes. And it has a really unique way to record. You can tell them what shows you like, and then it automatically records them and puts them in a place called the library where you can access them at any time. So thanks for the call, Linda. Hopefully I answered her question there. Scott is next up. Scott calling from Hartford. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good on this Friday. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. The temperature on the back of my thermometer at my house is 105. I think it's broke.
Are you in the sun? I think that thermometer's in the sun. That would be hot.
that would be very toasty. I feel like I'm in South Texas if that was the case. But yeah. I wanted to talk to you about the great stadium debate here. So yeah. I have some questions for you first before I ask my question. The state owns the stadium. Is that correct?
Stadium district, but well, yeah.
The taxpayers.
Yeah, yes. Correct.
Okay. The Brewers are willing to commit to an additional 20 years if they get the funding.
Right.
The Brewers pay rent to the state, correct?
I think so, yes.
And the state has, what, a $3 billion
surplus? $7
billion surplus. Yeah, $7 billion surplus. So the Brewers... Not the Brewers. The stadium district is asking for what, just over $400 million for the next 20 years for stadium improvements.
Yeah, upgrades, things that gradually deteriorate over time.
So to me, the only problem is the fact that Milwaukee County and the city don't want to participate. Well, what else is the problem?
What do you mean? Like what else? So beyond that, what's the problem?
Yeah, beyond the fact that the state says they can't come up with a deal. Why can't they come up with a deal? Does it just go back to the fact that Republicans and Democrats can't get along no matter what the issue is?
If I had a bell, I'd ring it. But yeah, that's probably a lot of it. Look, and thanks for the call, Scott. Look, this has to get figured out. It will get figured out. But there's a lot of animosity. And this is not breaking news. There's a lot of animosity between Republicans and Democrats in the state of Wisconsin, right? Republicans think one way on many things. Democrats think differently. One of the things I was encouraged by recently was the thawing or softening of those tension points over budget, shared revenue, pick an issue, education. And they seem to, Governor Tony Evers was a Democrat, Republican legislature led by Robin Voss in the Assembly and Devin LeMahieu in the Senate, seem to have figured that out with, by the way, the cooperation of Milwaukee. But apparently some of the folks in Milwaukee are butthurt about any compromise. They don't like the fact that, and I think they have every right to do it, somebody in Madison saying, you're not doing it right in Milwaukee. Here's what we think you should do. I have zero problem with that because in many ways you're not doing it right in Milwaukee. But here's the deal on this. Milwaukee, they have to contribute to this in some fashion. Maybe it's part of this tax increase that will be passed. Maybe it's something else. This is a stadium that we own, essentially, that is utilized by a Major League Baseball franchise, which are pretty unique. And there's other cities that would take them in a second. I don't want to revisit when the Braves left. Now, doesn't make the Brewers perfect. Doesn't mean they shouldn't kick in. All of those things should happen. The only way this gets done, in my opinion, is a sense of shared responsibility, a sense of shared ownership, and a sense of we're going to share the burden here. We're all going to contribute. City, county, state, maybe even private sector, and the Brewers. That's how it should work, in my opinion. If we're going to have a facility like this, we have to maintain it. And to not maintain it abdicates your responsibility when you own something. Just like a house. You don't fix the roof every 25 years. That's on you. So get the funding to fix that roof, reshingle it, whatever. That's a reality of ownership. And that's something I think we all have to realize when it comes to the Brewers. Now, we don't all agree on this. Joseph Pecci, a Democrat, does not want to put any money in on this deal. That's typically a Republican position. Bill McCosh is my Republican strategist. He wants a deal. So it's not as easy as Republican and Democrats, but it is as easy as getting to a compromise. And in this state, we know, having seen what we just saw, compromise is possible. Quick break. Ask Steve anything. What's your question after this? Everybody's working for the weekend. That's my story. Hopefully that's yours as well. Weekend coming up. Looks like great weather here in Wisconsin. Hopefully it's nice where you're at. Jeff will be joining you live from Summerfest just after the top of the hour news at noon. Little cleanup on our Ask Steve Anything questions. Do you think Paul Ryan, this is from John in Burlington, do you think Paul Ryan will jump in the presidential race? I don't. Now, that's a great question for this reason. I've talked about this before. Paul Ryan should be the standard for a Republican. Now, because of politics and Donald Trump, that's not the case. And some people erroneously and foolishly called him a rhino, which is about as far from the truth as you could ever be. But I don't think he's done. Now, I could be wrong, of course, because it's just a prediction, and predictions could be up or down, yay or nay. I think he's got it in him to do something else in politics. I don't know what that is, and he's certainly not sharing that with me. But given his smarts, his overwhelming desire to do things that are positive for the country, doesn't mean we'd all agree on what those are. That's never going to be the case. So, and I spent an hour on stage once arguing this point with Chelsea Handler. If you don't like the policy, shouldn't demonize the individual. That there's too much of that. And I saw some of that going on with the child care tax credit story in Wisconsin this week. Just because I disagree on an issue doesn't give you carte blanche to call me a demon or demonize me, or some people's weird, twisted world, call someone Hitler because they don't agree that everyone should pay for your kid's child care. Is there accommodation that could be made? Sure. And we had, under the pandemic funding, some funds available for that. But at the end of the day, when you think about budgeting, when it's tight, you have to make decisions. Now, many people are hanging their hat on the surplus, as if it's this unbelievable pile of money that we can just spend like crazy. It's a one-time pile of money. If Republicans win the day on tax cuts, we shouldn't have massive surpluses, just like you shouldn't give the federal government your money to use all year and then get a big refund at the end. It makes no sense. Why would you let them use your money for free? But set that aside. The bottom line is we're going to disagree on policy, but somebody who says something different than you say on any issue related to politics doesn't make them a bad person. And we've gotten to this world. Heck, I did the story earlier. Somebody that was on a sub who had the means to go down to the Titanic, you can't have compassion for them because they're rich. That's foolish and stupid and dumb. My take. Why in the last 5 years have weather reports started to report the feels like temperature by default? I don't know. They always need to come up with new things to talk about when it comes to weather. New clever. Did you know what a derecho was before they started talking about that? I had no idea. My dad was a meteorologist. They got to tweak it. They got to make it interesting. You know, these cold fronts that they've, you know, nicknamed and hurricanes. And there's stations in Wisconsin that do their own name, which is confusing. And they say it's not. We've always done it that way. Blah, blah, blah. That's the reality. Weather people have to entertain. And they're often very good at it. And that's I'm a defender of weather people. Not an easy job. Could be snowing in one place, half hour away, could be completely dry. That's the challenge of weather forecasting. All right, my time is up on this Friday and on this week. Jeff Wagner's coming up live from Summerfest. If you haven't gotten out there, get out there. Grounds are gorgeous. The fun is there for the taking. Music's incredible. And the beverages are worth talking about as well. Jeff Wagner will tell you about all that. Well, maybe not the beverages part. After this, the news on WTMJ.